case this morning, Abbott versus Sangamon County.
Hey, police court, Michael J. Costello from Springfield. This is an appeal of a summary judgment of a 1983 action alleging false imprisonment, false arrest, and excessive use of force against a deputy sheriff police officer. The district court granted summary judgment, finding that there was probable cause to arrest, there was no excessive use of force, and that the the deputy sheriff, was entitled to qualified immunity. Briefly, animal control officers were trying to recover a dog running loose in the neighborhood. The plaintiff, a son, and the other plaintiff was his mother, made some caustic remarks, profanity to the animal control officers, wouldn't help them, went into the house and kept calling the dog to try and get the dog inside. Animal control officers advised that this dog had been doing this quite a while on other occasions. A deputy sheriff is called, not the defendant, who goes up to the house and talks to the son, who's about 20, 21. Says, come on out, we'll talk about this. He uses profanity and says some naughty things. He might
have made some gestures.
Yes, he may have shaken his fist. But he's inside. And the police officer is outside. Mother comes home, parks her car in back of the deputy sheriff's car. Now, the person he shook his fist at was the defendant here. Mother goes in, gets him to come outside. He's arrested, cuffed, taken to the squad car. He's making some remarks of profanity to everybody. I think he even said something to his mother. Police officer puts him in the squad car in the back. He starts acting up. That's undisputed. Car backs down. The officer hits the mother's car. She got very upset. She started walking while this is going on. The son is acting up in the squad car. She's walking towards the police officer. He says, he gets out of the car. Defendant's still in the back seat. Stop! She was screaming, you hit my car. She keeps coming. Presumably, uncommon sense to look at the damage to her car. Police officer's statement is that she is coming to help her son escape. She keeps coming, stop twice. She doesn't stop. He uses his taser on her. She collapses on her back. He yells and comes up to her, turn over, so he could cuff her. And she's stunned.
Is she struggling at that point?
No, she's lying on the ground.
You've got evidence in the record that she has complied with that order to stop, or that she's not struggling with him.
No, she never complied with the order. She kept coming.
Okay, but even after taser, did she?
She was stunned. She couldn't do anything.
She was not moving.
She was lying flat on the ground on her back.
It's after the first taser.
After the first taser. And he says, turn over, and he tases her again. It's unclear, either he turned her over or she turned her over finally. He cuffs her. goes back to the squad car, and the son is still acting up, takes the cuffs, puts them forward, and starts... I don't believe the evidence ever showed he tried to kick out the windows, but the officer, they grapple in the back seat. The officer tases him. The plaintiff's version is that he said, "Let me get you again, let me get you again, let me get you a good one." And he's screaming stuff to the officer, not nice words. Officer gets him out of the car. The plaintiff says he was thrown out of the car, knee three times, bingo. Tased again, and then finally he's cuffed from taken off from the front and cuffed in the back. That's the end of the incident. The theory of the plaintiff is that there was no reasonable cause to arrest her. There was no reasonable cause. She had violated no law by not stopping. I mean, my goodness. She got tased. We suggest that's an excessive use of force. She was arrested. By the way, she was arrested for obstruction of justice and resisting arrest. She could not deny that the police officer said that he thought she was coming up. That was his subjective belief. We couldn't deny that. But and what she was thinking is also subjective. But the issue becomes, does a police officer have a right to arrest someone walking up and saying stop, and then come up with, I think she was trying to help someone escape. Now, why would she help someone escape when she brought the person out to be cuffed in the first place? Excessive use of force with tasers. There are cases that hold that officers can use tasers. We've given some case law that said that where you use pepper spray and you repeatedly use it when a person's incapacitated or is not causing any difficulty, that is excessive.
So what evidence is there, Mr. Costello, that Travis was being compliant with Deputy Sweeney's orders when he was being tased?
I would suggest only he was not being compliant, and I would suggest only that he was not being compliant prior to being tased when he was acting up, and I would only suggest that if, in fact, he was fighting with, that's what we'll call it, the officer, because he was being tased, and it was self-defense, which can be used on the use of excessive force in an arrest.
Do you contend that the first tasing of Travis was excessive?
No, we'd have to really look at that. No, okay. It was not.
So
the second
tase.
That's
justified, and
yes.
It doesn't work, and he's continuing to resist and fight. That sounds like pretty, at least within room for qualified immunity.
But outside, he's down, he's tased.
Is he down and compliant?
I believe so, finally, Your Honor.
Based on what testimony?
Deputy Sweeney, the defendant, and also Travis said
so. Can you direct me to specific answers in depositions?
I can only direct the court to specific... specific statement of facts where Deputy Sweeney begins at...
Your account of the facts says Deputy Sweeney stunned Travis Abbott with his taser until he stopped fighting.
That's correct. That is correct, Your Honor. There was no probable cause to arrest him.
Hey, say, I'm a little concerned about jurisdiction here. You dismissed the county and the sheriff only without prejudice.
We're not coming back.
Would you agree that you would dismiss them with prejudice?
Yes. Yes. The district court put that in the order.
All right. So your dismissal of them is with prejudice?
Yes. Right. Yes. If there's any liability in payment for these plaintiffs, it's still viable, even though the county is not named. I have no further... I don't believe qualified immunity applied because of the excessive force. The court has stated about Travis. Our defense to that is something that there was no probable cause to arrest, and there was no justification to tase the mother. There was no probable cause to arrest her. And one last point on probable cause. The state of Illinois, you have to be able to implement your act when you're making an assault or disorderly conduct. He's in the house. Officer was untouchable at that point. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, and good afternoon. Brett Elward on behalf of Deputy Sweeney. I just have a couple remarks I'd like to make. When we're looking at the assertions of the with respect to the whether there's a probable cause sufficient to make the arrest, I think the one thing we need to look at when we're talking about Travis is that the actions here, the actions that the district court went through that Travis was taking, were directed against the animal control officer. That animal control officer is the individual who then called the police and called the Riverton police and called the Sangamon County police in, and they responded to his request for assistance. And Travis admitted that he had threatened the animal control officer. So when they make the argument, well, everything was in the Travis was inside the house, how could he be a threat? The threatening conduct was made with respect to the animal control officers, and some of the things he was doing, counsel has gone over a few of those, but he was essentially telling the animal control officers, if you take my dog, I'm going to come out and put you on the ground. He's making physical threats against these gentlemen, so it's not just a verbal threat. Now, with respect to the excessive force claims, I think one thing we have to keep in perspective here. It's one thing to have a nice long conversation about this, but I would urge the court to consider that these events, from the moment that Travis was placed into the squad car, which is really the point in time when all of the facts relating to the excessive force claims started, it's probably taking less time than we're here today to talk to you about this. This is something that occurred very fast, and I bring that up for this reason. One of the things that we look at in assessing reasonableness under the Fourth Amendment, under the excessive force, is putting ourselves in the position of the officer and asking what would a reasonable officer do in those circumstances from that officer's perspective. We have to remember that these events took place very rapidly. We had Travis in the back of the police vehicle who's somehow slid his hands from behind him under his feet, and he has them in front of him. The police vehicle, it's undisputed, doesn't have a protective caging or netting between the back seat and the officer. The officer obviously recognizes this is a bad situation. The testimony is he's trying to holler at his mother for help. The officer gets out of his car after he bumps into the Jeep. He's heading back to restrain to Travis, and all of a sudden the mother approaches him. She comes at him, and she's yelling at him, and he says, "Stop." And her only response is, "I don't remember whether he said stop or not." The evidence is that he said stop. He even says stop or I'll tase you, and she keeps coming. So we have a justification for the excessive force, part one. Justification for excessive force, part two, with respect to Cindy, takes place after she's down. The officer says, "Roll over so I can cuff you," and she does not.
The record here indicates, the record from the taser indicates,
yes,
that second shock,
yes,
came 4 seconds after the first one ended, the one that knocked her down. And I don't have any trouble, frankly, with qualified immunity, at least for the first tasing under these circumstances. I'm a little concerned. I mean, tasing is supposed to knock somebody down, incapacitate them, as opposed to being able to then comply with orders to roll over. So I guess I'm a little troubled by that second tasing of the mother.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there's nothing in the record that really discusses that other than the officer saying that I warned her.
Well, are you saying that if she's not compliant, he can tase her into compliance?
Yes, I think he can.
So if she's flopping around on the ground, he can just tase her again?
Yeah, well, according to the facts here, it sounds like what happened was he tased her. She was on the ground. I'm assuming she was on her stomach, and he's trying to get her to roll over. She doesn't respond to his request to do so that he can cuff her.
And
so he tases her again.
Didn't she give some testimony that she couldn't she was immobile. She was sort of paralyzed, temporarily paralyzed by the taser.
That's right. That was a testimony. I think one
so,
of the
so that would show her to be not resisting, but just non-compliant.
Well, that's her assessment of what happened.
Right.
Remember, we have
to, in looking at summary judgment, if there's a disputed fact.
I understand that
she gets
absolutely
all the favorable inferences from the disputes of fact.
But our focus in this case is on the arresting officer and what he was doing, what was reasonable for him to assume when he tells somebody, he tases them and says, "Roll over, I'm going to cuff you." And they don't respond. If we're going to require our officers to then try to assess from the benefit of hindsight and say,
so
well, maybe she couldn't.
An officer in the scene of a melee like this sees a spectator and says, "Would you move to the left?" And they don't, and they can tase them?
Well, no, I think in the circumstances that we have here, where we have a clear scenario in the back seat of the car where Travis has created commotion, he's saying, "Mother, help me." He's got his handcuffs in front, or his hands in front of him, even though they're cuffed. The officer gets out to address that situation, and all of a sudden the mother is in his face, running up there. He says, "Stop." She doesn't stop. She continues on.
I'm talking about the second tasing, not the first.
Mm-hmm.
She's down on the ground. Mm-hmm. She's been tased. She's showing the obvious effects of being tased. Otherwise, she'd still be on her feet. It worked, and he can tase her again.
Well, I think the critical question is, when did she reach compliance? And in this case, the officer's assessment at the time on the scene was that she had not complied.
She had stopped. She went down.
She was down. There's no question about that. That's true. And I think that's why the district court addresses, and I think it's page 23 of its decision, where it says we don't look at the explanations that the arrestee gives for why they didn't comply. We look at what was reasonable for the officer at the time.
Well, I guess the trouble I'm having is that I think there's some testimony in the record that she was complying to the extent she was able to after being tased.
But I think
she gets tased again.
I agree that her testimony is in there to the effect that you're stating. But I think the critical thing, Your Honor, is what did this police officer, what would a reasonable police officer in the position of Deputy Sweeney at this time under these circumstances assume in dealing with this individual? And did he believe that she had reached a point where she was compliant and not resisting? And I think we walk into a dangerous area if we're going to start looking at police activities in a very fast, quick-paced scenario and start trying to judge whether or not that officer was displaying proper perspective at the time. And I think the qualified immunity analysis gives us the ability to say maybe even if the officer does make a little bit of a mistake now and then in his assessment, as long as it's not an intentional act, as long as it's not a willing, knowing violation of the law, that qualified immunity will still protect that officer in that scenario.
Suppose she's down on the ground. I'm just imagining an alternate scenario. Mm-hmm. She's down on the ground after the first tase. Officer Sweeney, or Deputy Sweeney, turns to deal with Travis and comes back to Ms. Abbott still on the ground a minute and a half later, 2 minutes later. Can he tase her again then?
I think that would be a different scenario. That would probably raise more suspicions because at that point the subduedness would be suggested by the circumstances.
He'd have a little more time to reflect.
Exactly. As that time frame starts to expand from the original tasing and the lying on the ground, as he moves to something else and turns around, she's still there. At that point, we've got a completely different situation. Mm-hmm. I've got a much harder argument.
Let me ask you, your expert witness, as I understand this, said in his deposition that on Travis's facts, the tasing would not have been warranted. Is that right?
I think that's what he said.
Sounds like a tough summary judgment case, then.
I mean, we have to look at the summary judgment based on the facts in the light most favorable to the plaintiff. So I would.
So why doesn't that testimony defeat?
Maybe I heard you wrong. I'm sorry. You said on Travis's facts that was not excessive force. That's what I heard you say.
Here's the question. This is page 30 of. Whose deposition is this? But it's your expert. And the question is, okay, what's your opinion as to Travis? Answer, taking in statements alone and nothing else involved based on just what Travis said happened as fact, as truth, question yes, answer, the use of the taser in that situation would not be warranted.
I guess I'm not.
It's page 30.
Right.
The deposition of Travis Dalby.
Right, I'm trying to find that. I'm sorry. I didn't have that marked. Okay. You said page 30. Okay. Which line is that on page?
Bottom 30? Of the page.
Very
started
long.
16. Mm-hmm.
Your Honor, the rest of his deposition, I'm drawing a blank on why he said it that particular way. I think there was a distinguishment on that. I know his ultimate conclusion was that the use of the taser was reasonable.
Based on whose facts?
I thought it was on the totality of the circumstances. I'd be happy to address that in a quick memorandum, Your Honor, in 7 days.
I'll take a look at the deposition. So.
Okay. Again, Your Honor, I think if we look at the situation, we look at the time constraints of this case, and we look at the fact that everything was on a condensed basis, I think, first of all, there was justification for the arrest. Second of all, I think the use of the taser was not excessive force. In any of the three, it sounds like we have only three now. Counsel has acknowledged the use of the taser in the first instance on Travis was reasonable. I think he's conceded that point. So we've only got three incidents we're looking at. I think the evidence shows in this case that this was reasonable, and we are asking you to affirm. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.